This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 128, recorded on August 1st, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. Here in a stormy, we got some thunderstorms rolling through. I think that seems to be a common theme on Thursdays. But here in sunny Bellevue, Nebraska, stormy actually tonight. And we post the show with world-class show notes. Andrew, I got to get you back on that. Out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show. Just send me an email, podcast@TheAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter at Jay Collison or follow the show schedule. I actually use that this week. Out at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can also join us for a live chat during the show. Head over to TheAverageGuy.tv/live if you're on YouTube. And right below the live stream window, you can get live chat. It's live stream, so just log in. You don't need to have a user account with live stream. If you do, it remembers your preference. You don't have to have one. And we'd love to have you join us via a tablet or mobile device as well. We've enabled low bandwidth streaming out at our live page, and give that a try if you'd like. I didn't get too much feedback, although I got some live feedback last week from the guys in chat and said it was working real well. So if you're on your mobile device, no chat, but if you're out and about on your mobile device, you can listen to us live. Android, iPhone, Windows Phone, any of those, go out to theaverageguy.tv/live. Have a, it will automatically adjust for you. And then if you want to watch the high bandwidth YouTube page all the way up in the upper right hand corner, just click on that. It says YouTube high bandwidth, and that will get you a little bit better of a picture during the show. All right. Well, if you want to stay around for a bit, we might have a little bit longer of a show tonight. We got a bunch of guys and a lot of stuff to catch up on, and some good. This will be the last in a series of three on hard drives, and we'll talk a little bit about what we use and how we use them and some tools around them, as well as we'll get an update from Christian on kind of his whereabouts and what he's doing here coming up in the fall, quite possibly. And it's good to see Andrew out there as well. So Christian and Andrew, welcome to the show. Glad to have you out.
Good to be here.
And then joining us tonight as well, all the way over to the right on the screen, and a guy who likes to talk about Window Home servers, John Zadler. John, how are you?
Hey, Jim. Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm doing good. I just before the show there, like I was telling you off air, just reinstalled, well, actually did the Windows 8.1 preview update on my Windows 8 machine, so got that all going, so it was pretty good. Microsoft seems to be cleaning it up well, you know, how they're doing their install, so
are you on
not
that
as
right
crazy
now?
As back in the day.
Are you using that right now?
Yeah, fresh, man, fresh. At least it's good because, like one of the things when you get it going there, and then you, especially with Chrome, right, when you install Chrome browser, it's sort of like the same thing, is all your tabs come in, all your bookmarks and stuff. So that's just like on the phone that happens, you know, when you log in, when your Microsoft ID, a lot of your stuff starts to populate, your backgrounds come in and stuff. So it gets rid of a lot of the headaches and stuff that people had to put up with before. So hopefully the new generation, they'll just, you know, it'll be all like, you know, they'll just be there and they'll accept it and we'll say, I remember back in the name when I had to do something.
Remember when you had your settings forward and you had to back stuff up? Remember those days?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we'll be saying that. And then next to John. John, welcome, by the way. The other John in our community and the guy, over at Home Server Show. John Stutzman, you are making the round this week. Home Server Show last night, Home Tech tonight. How are you?
I'm great. I'm kind of dizzy, you know. I feel like I'm going every which way.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk some good stuff tonight. I know for those who just listen to our show and don't listen to Home Server Show, if you want to catch John over there, he is on episode 232, I think, is what we're up to at this point from last night, homeservershow.com, and we talked a lot. There at the end there, John, I'll be honest, I just let you guys talk. I kind of sat back. I got an email from, or I got a message from Mike Howard who said, hey, wake up back there on the show. So nice job of talking all things microservers, and of course you are that. Later in the show we may get Kevin Schoonover back on. He just got the Gen 8 microserver, and so we might drag him in for some post-show stuff going forward. All right, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, last in the series of three about hard drives. Some great information. You think there wouldn't be that much to talk about, but as I've brought in different guests on the show, they've each come at it from a unique twist. This is show 128, so you can find this, the show notes, HT128. You can find the other two, just 126 and 127. Just go out to theaverageguy.tv/ or /HT, and then the the number, in that case, 126 and 127. Some good information. You know, the hard drive's not dead. Still a lot of things to talk about around there. I'm going to start all the way over there with John Zadler and talk a little bit about, John, I know you've got some unique drives that sit, you use that Western Digital Sentinel, and you've got some unique drives that are in there. But kind of what are you using for drives right now? I know I sent you a bunch of 3-terabyte drives about a year ago. Are those still hanging around? What are you using these days?
Yeah, those drives are hanging around. The one you sent me, they were 3-terabyte Western Digital Greens. So, you know, they're a little bit, you know, quieter, you know, energy efficient and all that stuff. And, you know, the bigger the drives are, since they're 3 terabytes, I think the cache is larger, you know, 64 meg cache. I think that's how they are. And, yeah, with the Western Digital, as you pointed out, they're using these drives, which are called the enterprise drives. And I think they go for about, like, 250, 300. They're like Western Digital's high-end drives. And they're what we call WDRE4-GP. So I guess there's some GP meaning, I guess, is that's the green, and RE4 means that they can be put as part of a RAID array. Because you know how, like, some people, they talk about using, you know, should you use green drives in a RAID array? Because the way a RAID array works is, you know, you have multiple drives, and there's some redundancy, and the drives are always kind of like running, and they're always doing their thing, and they're on 24/7. So, you know, using drives that are the green drives that kind of slow down or go to sleep when you know, to save power, that's not the best to use. So these drives, they're made to always be on, just like the Western Digital Blacks, I think, are the high-end ones. And then 6 months ago, didn't they come out with the red ones, which are seems to be a nice in-between. They're quieter drives, but they're not necessarily green drives. So I ended up getting one of those green drives from Western Digital when my warranty was almost up on my drive. So I says, you know what? I think I can call Western Digital and tell them I'm not happy with this drive. So I sent it back to them, and they sent me a 3-terabyte red. So I'm happy to have that one.
Yeah. What are you using on the Windows 8 box that you have there? What are you using in there?
On my Windows 8 box, I'm using a 60-gig SSD. So, and then what I do is, because I have the home server on my, I have a MediaSmart server that's running 4 2-terabyte Western Green. So that's on there. So all my content, what I try to do is have all my documents, folders, pictures, videos, and everything, all my content running on the server, you know, all that, whatever takes up a lot of disk space, let that go to the server, and just use the PC for, you know, for the quick stuff there, the, you know, the apps and stuff like that. And so I want to keep data on my laptop drive. So then when I do, if my computer does crash and I do have to do a server PC recovery, I'm not bringing in all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm just bringing in, you know, the OS and some of the little programs I'm using. So that's the way it goes for me.
You know, John, you just said laptop drive, and it just reminded me, I was on my kind of my workbench that I work on all the PCs. It's just on the other side of the monitors here. And I've got 6 laptop drives, 5400 RPM. They're mostly Western Digital, the blue laptop drive, so 5400 RPM drives. Not great. They're okay. I have 6 of those just stacked up. I don't know why. I've bought them at various stages, and I've kind of stopped using them, and so they're just sitting on the bench stacked up. They're not great performers to put in desktops, so I've kind of left those out for that. But I'd always kind of hoped I was going to get that Mario would send me one of those Drobo Minis that took the 2.5-inch drives, and I just about had one, and then the merger took place, and Mario was asked to leave, and I didn't get a Drobo Mini. So they sit unused at this point, so I got a few stacked up. Do you have any stacked up that you just use as spares, or are you using everything at this point?
Yeah, I'm using everything. Oh. I got, like I said, 4 drives in my DX4000. I got the 4 2-terabyte drives in the MediaSmart server, and then I got some 1-terabyte drives. The smallest drives I have really are the 1-terabyte drives. Those are also green drives. Again, you know, they came out before the reds, and so those ones are in an enclosure that I use to actually back up. Because, you know, even though you have a MediaSmart server and all your content is there, just because it's there, does, you know, that might be your, like I said, since I move my files to there, my documents, pictures, and everything, you know, that might, I might just have one copy there. So I do want to have a backup. The media smart server doesn't mean that that's a backup. It just means that's where all my files are. So since I do want to back it up, I connect it to a Sans Digital 4-bay enclosure, and that guy has, like I said, the 4 1-terabyte drives. So I duplicate my content or back up the content onto those drives. And that's about anything smaller than the a 1 terabyte drive. I don't want it. You got to chuck them. They start to be, you know,
pass,
like, this,
pass
what?
Them down.
Yeah,
give
back in the day,
else.
You had the 80s, the 40 and 80 gigs and 160 gigs. It's like there's no use keeping them. Because even now, the smaller drives, like the single drives that I think Western Digital are building, it's like a 500 gig drive. Like, you know, it's one disk. You know, because the technology for the disks gets better, they're able to put more data on one disk. So back in the day when you had a 500 gig drive, there might have been two or three platters, you know, in the drive. Whereas now you can get a very energy efficient drive, one platter, and it's 500 gigs. It's like I'd be hard pressed to see if you can actually find a drive that is, you know, on the small capacity side, like a 250 or a 320 or something.
Yeah, I've got a 320 drive on this studio PC. I actually use it to record TV to. And so it holds probably 2 months of recordings for me, and that's good enough. That way I don't get too much data on that drive. You know, it kind of limits that artificially because as soon as it fills up, then Windows Media Center starts deleting those TV programs off of it. So I keep about 2 months worth of stuff on the drive.
Yeah,
so.
That's a good point because...
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, you bring up a good point because if you have let's say your main PC like mine is the SSD, and if I'm recording TV shows, it's not good to, you know, it's going to record to that hard drive, to the SSD drive. And then, like you say, you know, then you're off, what do you call that? Off shooting, off, you know, you're
offloading.
Offloading it, yeah, to the server. It's like that SSD is getting too much mess. So it's better to just throw in maybe a laptop drive, like you say, a 320 or something. Just put a little bit of a junky drive, you know, just to be that sort of like drive that's going to pick up all that data, and then it's going to get tossed to your server. So as long as it's running around, you know, it doesn't have to be like best reliable drive because you're just using it temporarily and then putting it there. As long as it works. As long as it's a workhorse, but if it's a slow drive, that's fine.
Yeah. Thanks, John. John Stutzman, I want to ask you the same question. We've asked all the guests so far what they're using, and you've got quite a list. You concluded what you've used and are using. Let's limit that to what you kind of currently have. What's the just kind of quickly run down what you are currently using?
Well, pretty much the drives that are in that list, I do have a number of Western Digital EADS green drives, 1.5 terabyte or 2 terabyte, those were originally what I was getting for my version 1 of Windows, but now I'm using them a lot for backup drives. I'm using them all for that. One I had installed in a build that I had helped my son with. We were going to use a Western Digital Black, and it was DOA, so I grabbed a 2 terabyte green and we stuck it in there, and that's been running for a year and a half, and it was about 2 years old when I put it in there. So it's a very reliable drive. Now, when John will remember, he helped me rebuild my version 1 box, and I had a Western Digital EARX. It was a 2 terabyte. It was the advanced format. It had the larger cache, and I tried it out as a system drive and had to do some gyrations to use it, and it worked out fabulously. It was really a nice drive. I could see a big speed difference. So I ended up populating the entire my EX487 with EARXs. So I have four of those things, and then I have a couple of Western Digital 30 EZRXs. That's their 3 terabyte version of the advanced format green drives. Six SATA 3 ports on them with 64 meg of caching. And I have one Western Digital 3 terabyte red. It's the EFRX, and I have that in it's overkill for my HTPC, and I'm thinking of yanking it out and putting something smaller in, but then I'm not sure where I would stick the red after that. So, since there's only one of them, I got a 2 terabyte Western Digital Black, an FAEX, and a 1 terabyte. Both are 6 gig or SATA 3 type drives with 64 megabyte caches. And then the vast number of drives that I have are the Seagate ST3000 DM001s. Those things are fast drives. The first one I got, I just got sort of like when I got the single red, you know, I got one Seagate, tested it, and the performance I just thought was phenomenal. And so I've ended up getting about 13 of those drives. And
what? 13?
I've accumulated them over time.
What are you doing with these? Are USB drives?
No, these are internal drives.
Okay, all right.
The ST3000 DM001.
Where would you even put 13 drives?
Well, I have five of them in my Windows Home Server 2011.
Okay.
And
so the other eight.
And the other eight, four are in. In my build, where I built a storage server, and I wrote up about that, how I used it for testing some things, and how I use it to keep track of all my VMs. I make copies of my VMs and then store them out there from my different machines. So I have them all. So I have like a second storage in a site. But those are actually mirrored, so it gives me some redundancy.
You might be rivaling the Johnson family total storage. So have you gone through this list and figured out? So Christian, while I'm talking about this, think about what's the total storage you guys have available at the Johnson family household. John Stutzman, how much do you think you've got all here? You haven't counted it.
You could add them up. I haven't done that. And, you know, it's the whole point of it is, and the other four I've been using, I did use the other four before when I was testing Essentials, 2012 Essentials, and I had a box build with that in it. And I had the Seagate drives in it, and it was I basically made it as a duplicate of my Windows Home Server in 2011 as far as data so that I could really, you know, beat on the thing. I kept them synced up with Always Sync and everything, and I ran it for a good 6 months and really banged on it with storage spaces. And before I tore it apart, and then I've used those drives for various testings, things that I've posted up on the, you know, on the blog over at the Home Server.
We'll tell folks if you just listen to this show and you're not listening to homeservershow.com and you're wanting to see some of John's performance testing, he does probably a better job than anybody I've seen when it comes to actually writing up performance tests on drives. Head over to homeservershow.com. He's riddled throughout the the newer posts, so you can check that.
Yeah, I gave you some links to show notes. Surprisingly, too, I found with the testing that I do, it's actually a lot better if I have the smaller drives. And I was so I really was kind of coveting those 250 gigabyte drives that we get with the micro servers. And I had three of them, and then I had an old Seagate that had come with my original EX487. It was my original OS drive, and I was using those four drives, and I came some occasions where I needed more little drives, so I bought a couple of white label drives for like 30-some bucks, $33. And so I use those to just kind of, you know, it's like I have a RAID car. If I want to set something up in RAID, I can just use the small drives, play around with it to see what things I can do. And like if you're setting up a RAID 5 or a RAID 6, I don't have to waste a lot of time waiting for the thing to build itself out. I can just put the drives in and play with it. Now, another thing that I haven't even touched on, and I know it happened to you, and probably the same guy did it to me, Kevin Schoonover. I hope he's listening. He got us both. I won't speak for you, but he got us onto the Velocity Raptor bandwagon. He showed us a cheap source for him. And then once I started seeing those things there, and the first one I got was actually a Generation 6 VR from those guys. And I tested it, and I thought, oh, my God, this is great. And so I've started doing other things with Velocity Raptors. And like in my desktop when that I'm speaking from, this is kind of – I'm kind of diverging here. But, you know, you just cut me off anytime you want. But my desktop is an X58. It's a Gigabyte. and it had some G-SATA 3 ports, but they weren't really very good as SATA 3 ports. They weren't very fast. They didn't have they were only topping out at about 400, which is just barely above SATA 2. And but the thing was, when I upgraded it to Windows 8 Pro, G-SATA, the Marvell controllers, weren't compatible. And so I had to shut all that stuff down. So now all I'm stuck with is I have six Intel ports that I can use. Well, I can't really get much speed for like video rendering because I have an i7 in this machine. But when I'm using Camtasia to video render videos, like from my last vacation, we had three cameras and we shot almost 2 hours worth of video, and I wanted to like stitch it all together, all the different formats, and you know, there's a lot of banging on the hard drive. So I went and I ordered some Velocity Raptors, and I put three of those in a RAID 0, and it is nice. I love it.
Yeah, it is
great.
Yeah, we talked about that before. You know, I built that same thing out, and it is just lightning fast to do it that way. So that's always a good call, John. So you on your main boxes that you've also, and we've talked about this extensively, so I don't want to go too much into it, but you made the switch, right? You got SSDs on most of the production stuff that you're, most of the PCs that you're running, you've got SSDs up front.
Every computer now that I have, except for my original V1 box, which is a EX487, has at least one SSD, and it's for the OS drive.
Do you have a preference? You know, everybody kind of seems to have their preference on SSD. Do you have your preference on the company you like to go with?
Well, I started out with Intel, and I liked them, but then I moved on from there to Crucial, and I like Crucial. And then I went to Corsair, and then I just recently have purchased some Samsung. I would say my preference now going forward would be Samsung or maybe Crucial, just depending on the application. I do like the Corsair GTX, but if you want that kind of video processing horsepower, I think you might as well just go Samsung 840 Pro and be done with it.
Okay.
I did put a couple of Samsung 840 Pros in a RAID 0 and stuck that into my Hyper-V server along with several VRs in RAID 0 to give me some VM drives to work with, and I really like.
I'd say. And I have in a RAID 0. Yeah, that should be pretty fast.
Yeah, I put four VRs in a RAID 0, and then I put two Samsungs in a RAID 0.
Okay.
And so they have about the same performance. So it's the four Velocity Raptors were giving me something like about a throughputs of 800-900. I got it posted on the in the forums over at Home Server, and the Samsungs were giving me about 1,000 to 1,100 throughput read writes.
Yeah, pretty fast.
So it's
John Zadler, you just held something up. What were you trying to show there?
Yeah, that's my 60 gig Agility 3 drive that I got last year and stuff. So
okay.
still holding in there.
So, John, your question, what's your preference then on SSDs?
You asking me or other?
Yeah, John Stutzman, what's your preference? You're going to buy one now. What are you leaning toward?
I would look at the Samsung 840 Pro first.
All right, good enough. Good. That gives us a good landscape of what you got. We want to talk a little bit about tools. Everybody's got a different set of tools that they use on their drives. I'll go back to John Zadler. And John, what do you prefer when you're checking hard drives? What are your go-to tools?
Well, in Windows 8, there I use the built-in their disk cleanup and then the defrag. So, and it does some kind of trim, you know, as far as like when now the operating systems are smart enough to know if you have a spindle drive or a an SSD drive. So then it'll say, okay, you know, you have a spindle drive, and it'll run the defrag, and there you go. And if you have a SSD drive, then it'll say, okay, you know, we'll check for, because there's an option that you might have discussed in the past, like trimming. Like, you know, you don't, in an SSD, because it's memory, you're not running and, you know, moving things around so that it's all at the front of the drive. But you do want to kind of, like, clear some bytes and, like, you know, reset them to zero. So Microsoft, you know, they made their software, and I use that. For me, as I'm not, like, you know, a diehard crazy guy as far as, you know, fine-tuning my drive, so the built-in software that comes with Windows is what I use.
Okay. No extra special tools on the outside. No hard drive data. Western Digital's got a set of things. I mean, you have anything that you go to whenever you're having hard drive problems?
Well, in the past, I would play around with, since I had the home server and most of my drives were there, you know, there's a couple of apps there. One is the media, one is from StableBit, and the other one is StableBit Scanner, and the other one is that guy that was on your show. He was on a podcast before there, and he has his Media Smart.
Smart status, right?
Yeah. Yep. Matt Sawyer, I think, mm-hmm. His software. So when it comes to the hard drives like that, you know, then maybe I'll play around with it, maybe I'll put it on there. But it's a bit like if I start to see the drives giving me a hard time, a message will pop up, and it's like the return policy with Western Digital is so great that it's like, okay, it seems a little flaky. I don't need to know 100% that, my drive is going to fail. It's like, okay, it's giving me a bit of trouble, and then I just fire them off. I send them back and get a replacement.
Okay. John Stutzman, you've got a list. We've talked about some of these already. So in the last couple of weeks, we've talked about Crystal Disk, Info and Mark, ATTO, which is one of my favorites. If I think that's for the average consumer. If we haven't talked in depth about ATTO, but it's super easy to install, super easy to use. When you're doing benchmark testing, you use that at kind of, I don't want to say exclusively, but you use it a lot, right? I mean, that's kind of your go-to benchmarking tool?
It was the first hard disk benchmarking tool that I used. So because it was the first, I always use it so that I could always compare performance to benchmarks that I ran 3 years ago. And so I always use ATTO, but then, I've also picked up some other benchmark tools along the way. Crystal Disk Mark is very good. HDTune, I'm starting to play around with that. There's others out there that I've been looking at. Passmark has a toolkit set that is looking really interesting. I've gotten pretty close to purchasing that, and it's pretty cheap. So it's something worth looking at, I think. But
when you say pretty cheap, what do you mean?
I'm thinking it was like $20-$30.
Oh, that is pretty cheap.
And they have a no nonsense copyright policy where, you buy it, you can use it in your home, so you can use it on any of the computers in your home. You don't have to uninstall it and sign away your firstborn and all this stuff every time you want to move it from computer to computer. I just wanted to make a comment too. John mentioned StableBit Scanner, and I think we talked before about I had those Seagate drives, and I had never had a Seagate go bad on me until just recently. Scanner, I was checking the computer, and Scanner was giving me an error, saying that the drive was about to fail. And to get my data off of it. And so I took it out. I thought, maybe it's not really that bad. So then I started looking at it, and I have Seagate tools and the Western Digital tools. I think everybody should have those in their toolbox. And so I started checking it with Seagate, and Seagate couldn't even do a full test. It was failing. And so it gave me a chance to experience Seagate's return policy, which I thought was pretty cool. In their Seagate tools, if you fail, you can click and it takes you to warranty information. It tells you how much longer your warranty is good for. Mine was still good to December of 2014. And it also took you to showed you your options as far as how to return it and stuff like that. So in fact, it should have gotten to Seagate today. I checked UPS, it arrived there today, and they're going to ship me a new one, so we'll see how that works. But that's kind of a side note, but my philosophy on hard drives now is if I want tools that just help me get my data off of it if it's going to fail. If I want warning that it's going to fail, and I want to get my data off, and then I want to, if it's under warranty, I'm not going to mess around with it. I'm just going to, just like John said, I'm going to return that thing.
Yeah.
If you're having problems with a hard drive, even if it costs you money to send it back, you're only talking $6 to $10 to, depending on how you do it, to send the drive back and get a whole new drive. And Western Digital has been good about that. Policy so far with Seagate, think the hoops that I've jumped through, they seem at least as good, if not better, than Western Digital to deal with.
Yeah, they both do a pretty nice job. Christian, let me ask you, and Andrew, be ready. You guys have sat on two of these three shows. Any other tools that you guys use that maybe we haven't mentioned in the last two or three? We've covered a lot of them, but between the two of you, anything else that we missed?
No, I know we use Ada a lot, and we've used HD Tune Pro. In terms of seeing if drives are faulty, I think I mentioned last week the diagnostic health managers that are sometimes included in the BIOS and the health report that you can generate in Windows Vista 7 and 8, which is really useful for that kind of stuff. But that's about it.
Andrew, anything that you guys use at the enterprise level?
No, not really. I mean, most of our stuff gets picked up by, you know, something like Insight Manager or you know, physical walk around. I mean, we do a lot of centralized monitoring. I mean, in the home, I only really look for preemptive failure, so I'll use something like Crystal Info just to see what the smart status is on the box at any given time if I think there's something wrong with it. But I tend to just wait for things to fail, or I'm not really that concerned about benchmarking. If it doesn't work, then I sort of go with the thing that I'll worry about it when it breaks.
Yeah, and Andrew,
I'm not concerned about performance. I just stream video, so you know, and do backups. So I don't really have that much production throughput.
Sure. In the enterprise, are you guys seeing any preferences that you guys see? You know, constant failures in one area or something that works real well?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we use a lot of remanufactured product. You know, if you put in a warranty claim on an HP supplied disk, you'll typically get a remanufactured one come back. If it's a warranty claim, you know, some of the new boxes even get shipped with them. It's no, you know, at the end of the day, the enterprise grade stuff. I mean, we've got drives that have been spinning for over 1 million hours and you know, no issues with them. But then we've got other drives that all fail in the first couple of hundred. So yeah, we don't even bother looking anymore. We just wait for them to fail, and if they fail, then we replace them. You don't tend to go down to the level that you would at home. You know, at home, it's a bit more of an emotive experience, whereas in the enterprise, it's like, oh, well, you know, it failed. Let's get the service restored and get back into it.
Yeah, a little less personal.
Yeah. Right. At the end of the day, not, you know, the world's not going to stop if you drop a mirror or a RAID disk in the enterprise, because typically you've got a better class of backup and you've got a faster restore mechanism, and you've usually got more redundancy built into your system at the time. You know, I think anyone in the enterprise or small business who's not using RAID or minimum of RAID 1, then you're asking for trouble. But, you know, the type of environment I support, you know, we use RAID 1 at a minimum. We don't use RAID 0 at all. That's in local system, and everything in the SANs is at least RAID 5, 6, 6+0, even 10. Just depends on the type of disk that we need to provision. But you know, SAN failure, you know, you've got the smarts within the firmware that handle preemptive failure and whatnot. So typically your data gets shifted around the enclosure and then it'll tell you that the disk that needs replacing and you know, label it as failed. So yeah, it's different, very different type of management. You know, yeah. In the enterprise we use a lot of SAS as well. We don't use we use SAS. We don't use a lot of SATA drives at all.
It is a little bit different than the consumer. Let me throw this question out to the four of you guys, and this isn't one I really have asked on the other shows, but we haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the future. What if SSD follows the lead of where we went with spinners, drives get cheaper and they get larger as we go forward. And I think right now, you know, the breaking point is probably that 128 or 256 for SSD drives. I've heard and read that there are some math or mechanical problems with getting SSD getting them larger and larger. It's not, you just can't make more spindles. You just can't get, you know, those sizes. Well, guys, what do you think the future as we look out, you know, 3 to 5 years from now? Is there enough room in the SSD space for those to just keep growing and for them to get cheaper, or is there something else on the horizon that I don't know about?
Well, Moore's Law says you've got to be able to pack more into the same box as technology evolves, doesn't it? So, you know, I mean, SSDs are still in a, my take is SSDs are still in a sub 2.5 inch form factor. So, you know, until they reach the full size of a 3.5 and a fully loaded, I think there's a fair bit of growth left.
But can we take an SSD drive, blow it out to 3.5 and make it larger? And does that, at the larger 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, 3 terabyte, does that work? I mean, can we grow SSDs that way? Or does SSD have some limit that it can only go up so far and then we're we're done. I don't know. Does that work? Can we still get that large?
There's no limit right now.
Okay.
You could take SSDs and RAID them together, RAID 1 or RAID 0, RAID 10, and achieve some fantastic performance. And I know PC Doc had posted, and I had read too, a study where just for fun, some folks took 8 Crucials and attached them to a Rocket RAID 2720 and rated them, put them in a RAID 0, and I don't recall the performance, but it was really nice. And it's so really all you're asking is can they take that and shrink it down to a smaller package? I mean, you know, you take 8 256 gig SSDs, you know, say like the M4s, and you were to rate them together in 0. Well, that's 2 terabytes right there. So what you're really wanting to do is shrink it down to a smaller package. The problem right now is that we're getting close to maxing out the SATA 3s with the SSDs that we have. You look at the highest performance SSDs out there, and they're pushing close to that theoretical 600 cap performance or throughput that you have. So, you know, like when they rated them with the Rocket RAID, they still had that cap on each channel, but then they had all the additional SATA channels that they could deal with. Now, next year or the year after, we're going to start seeing boards coming out with the SATA Express. And while I'm not up on a lot of the details, I mean, you're looking at a big potential, you know, well, it's going to raise the cap. So once you raise the cap, well, then the thing is, you know, who's going to be filling it? And I've read studies. I wish I had a link to it. All I remembered to put in the show notes the link to that crystal hard disk drive that you may want to talk about later. But I had read a study where Samsung had done some stuff and had in a test setup had, don't quote me exactly, but I know it was something like about 1.6 read-write, which is pretty nice. That would be like putting three 840 Pros in a RAID 0. You know, that. So I think in the next year or two, you're gonna see a bump up in with the SATA Express, and then you're gonna start seeing SSDs to fill that.
What's up with the interface? They call it Thunderbolt. That's for hard drives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is there some kind of speed on there or what?
I don't know. I was just reading some of the stuff from chat, and I got distracted. I apologize. I don't know much of anything about Thunderbolt.
It really has not been a standard. I mean, it was, you know, Apple kind of controlled the cable on that for a while. And we saw some Thunderbolt products come out, 2 years ago, I think, at CES. Not really, you know, the external hard drive using Thunderbolt, at least for the main consumer, has not really caught on for the most part. So they still kind of sit. I don't know, Andrew, Christian, have you guys, Christian, let me ask you, has Thunderbolt showed up on your radar at all? And in the area, I mean, no?
No, I mean, the stuff that I've seen has just been considered kind of the high-priced outlier. I mean, you know, it's you had to have a very specialized application to want to use it, and I looked at the prices. USB 3. Didn't look much further. Yeah,
not like USB 3. Christian, are we seeing anything? John mentioned we're coming. You know, we're starting to push SATA. You know, SATA 3 at this point. From what you know with BIOS mods and such, anything that you know coming on motherboards themselves to begin to push that limit?
Not on board. I mean, I know we're pretty well within our SATA 6 limits, which a lot of the new boards are at now. But yeah, SATA 3, you have to be rating some SSDs to really hit that threshold. And like I said, if you're putting the money in the SSDs, chances are you're at SATA 6 anyway. So
yeah.
But you know, Jim, the new PC, well, like, I mean, Apple, they came out with that little, with the trash can PC, right? So aren't they connecting their drives? Like, are they using Thunderbolt? Like, you kind of wonder, as maybe PCs get kind of smaller, and then we do want to have, like, say, 2 terabyte drives. It's like, what's going to happen? What are you going to be using when your PC is going to be, you know, big like this? You know, it's going to be like the size of a, you know, pack of cigarettes or whatever. It's like, what are you going to connect to it, you know, and what type of interface are you going to have? Wonder where that's going to end up.
Yeah, well, Rennie's saying in chat, you know, the PCI is the next connector. And there is, in some regard, right, I don't know a lot about this. I do, you know, the Drobo 5N that I have has an M-SATA connector in the back, right? And that, in theory, that can be connected to a PCI bus. And I don't know the difference between, you know, between a SATA connection and a PCI connection from a speed perspective. Can anybody quote any stats, Andrew?
Couldn't give you stats, but I know it's faster. I mean, we're using embedded M-SATA for a lot of caching at the moment. I mean, you know, you look at a SAN, for example, and all the caching on a SAN, none of it's on SSD or spindle. It's all solid state on a wide bus. It's not on a you know, a narrow bus like SATA or SAS. It's all on the wideband stuff.
With SSDs going where they're going and M-SATA being what it is, why aren't we just moving, why don't we see M-SATA kind of on PCI taking over as kind of the boot drive for PC?
I think it's cost to market. I think the smaller you get, you make the technology, the more expensive it is. So you look at something like this guy, which I'll just unwrap.
Unboxing right here.
Yep, you saw it live. So this thing's a fiber write back controller for which will fit a Gen 8 microserver. That thing's got 512 meg of RAM on it. It's wholesale price around about $460.
Yeah.
So
don't drop any coffee on it.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, something like that. I think retail they're running around about $800 at the moment.
Ouch. Because, you know, one of the things I was thinking is, like, the microservers now, like the Gen 8, you know how now they, well, the earlier ones, they had the built-in the USB socket on the board, and now the new Gen 8, they have a SD card socket on the motherboard, you know? So it would be nice to see motherboards coming out that gives you the option, and again, like, to at least put in an M-SATA card, like, not sell it with it, just like the microservers, they're selling them now without any hard drives so that, you know, to keep the cost down. So it would be nice to see that kind of thing go along, that if you said, look, if I want to put in an SSD drive, I'll buy it separately. If I want a hard drive, I'll buy it separately. But it would be nice to have an M-SATA connector on there, so at least this way, if you wanted to buy your 60 gig from whoever it was, or 120 or 256, then at least you can upgrade them. Because one of the things with the earlier microservers is, you know, the CPU, it's like, it's fixed, so you can't update it. The new Gen 8 servers, you can upgrade the CPU. So it would be nice to see not like a fixed hard drive space, you know, on there. It's like, okay, I've outgrown the 60 gig M-SATA card. Just pop it out like you would, you know, pop out your memory and upgrade your memory, upgrade your M-SATA card. Do you know if there's a lot of small boards out there that have M-SATA, like, right out there
built into the motherboard? I guess you look at the number of laptops now that are coming to market that have an M-SATA accelerator on them. You know, my take on that is it's giving you hybrid drive performance without the cost of the hybrid drive, and so you've got the scalability. So you look at, say, I think Dell's, one of the Inspiron, well, I saw one of them the other day that had a 32 meg or 64 meg M-SATA module on it, but then you can change over your drive from, you know, 500 to a 1 terabyte spindle drive without having to worry about losing your investment in the hybrid technology if you would have otherwise gone down that path. So I think, I think it's part of the growth cycle in the technology. I think it's gonna be interesting to see where they go next, because at the end of the day, it's still flash, right? The M-SATA technology.
Yeah, you would think flash is flash, right? It's just how it's connected to the board. So why can't we, you know, why couldn't somebody develop the OS drive to have a 60 or 120 gig SSD that connected through PCI?
Well, you can get PCI. You can get PCI drive cards now in the enterprise. So we built a ProLiant DL380 Gen 8 server. So, you know, your 3-unit high box, you know, so what's that, 10 centimeters high. Those things had two 2 terabyte PCI X riser cards in them, but the cost of those cards was about 15 times the price of the server.
Well, yeah, it's because it's not mainline, right? It's not mainstream production.
Yeah, they're not quite bleeding edge, but they're pretty close to bleeding edge accelerated storage technology. And you know, these things are running seriously, seriously big MySQL databases. And moving that system from spindle with accelerator chips to these PCIX cards, they got something like a 150% improvement in database response time. So, you know, the technology's there, but I think each card was $12,500 or something. So you definitely pay for the privilege. So the cost offset, you know, in the home right. space, it's just right. it's totally not, it's out of the
still
realm.
Still not there but, yet. No, it's yeah. we're still where, you know, I think at this point we're still at the SSD realm. You know, we're all on the edge of putting just regular SSDs in our, you know, in our boxes and being good with it. Just wondering what you guys thought the future looked like for the average user going forward. Certainly, we always go ahead.
I think that technology will come down. I think it'll come through at some point in time. You know, you look at SSDs. You know, SSDs were first seen in the enterprise as pretty much caching controllers in SANs and the like. So I think the curve's already started. I think it's just a matter of when it's going to come through. You know, the greater the adoption and the immersion into the enterprise, and not even the small business at this stage, but you know, the more enterprise picks it up, and the faster they adopt it, the faster those prices are going to come down and become more affordable. You know, I'd reckon give it a couple of years, and I reckon we'll probably see, you know, people going the full fauché on stuff like that and buying a couple of them.
Okay, well, I have to wait.
You know, Jim, I wonder.
Go ahead, John.
I wonder. It's like, remember they had those laptops there. What do you call them? Chromebooks, where it's basically you're just connected to Wi-Fi and you're getting all your content there. So I wonder if at a point some of those two things will converge. It's like you'll have enough, let's say, hard drive space. You'll have a 256 gigabyte SSD drive in your computer, and then mostly your content will be like online. You know, so you'll have enough programs on there, either on a memory chip or whatever. Like your OS is on your computer. Whatever content you want, you're like syncing, let's say it'll sync your local drive, that SSD drive, with what's online. And if you wanted to get your content, because remember with the home server, we used to have everything at home. And now it's like, well, just go online and, you know, and get your, you know, stream it from online. So, and I think Microsoft even wants to do where the OS, it's almost like you're at your PC and you're actually streaming the OS. Remember like with the updates, how one of the Windows 8 updates, it's like you're actually streaming a program to your computer instead of just streaming a music or video streaming program. So imagine if your computer could be connected to, you know, you're in an area, just like, you know, if you get outside the area, your cell phone's not going to work. But if you're within a certain area, it's like, okay, just stream whatever content I need on my PC to do what I want. Then the rest, you know, it's up in the cloud. When I need it, it comes from the cloud onto my PC and I use it. So I think at a certain point, you'll be like, you know, you have how much space do I need on my computer? Then how much space, you know, how fast is the Wi-Fi so that I could get my content as I need it as I'm, you know, moving forward. So that might be a possibility. I don't know. I'm dreaming.
I'm thinking that it's going to be more, we're going to be down to the average user is going to see the driving down a price of tiered storage. We're going to see that more and more. We're just starting to see it in the latest release, the R2 release for Essentials and Server. I think you're going to see that pushed out further. And, you know, as prices come down, that's, you know, you're going to, I think, still want to be doing your massive storage on 4, 5, 6 terabyte drives, but you're going to have flash memory of some sort where that's going to give that a boost of performance so that the end user can cheaply see some pretty high performance, sort of like the Intel acceleration that you have on the motherboard now. And I experimented with that with virtual drives, and it worked really well, except if you I had a power outage and I lost about a half dozen VMs that I had to rebuild. And so I kind of soured on it at the time. But I think that technology improves. You have battery backup, or maybe just get somebody that knows what they're doing. And I think it's going to be accepted more and more.
Mm. All right. Good point. Guys, you know, we've been talking hard drives for a couple, 3 weeks now. I'll do one last shout out. There's a few things I want to cover kind of before we wrap up the show tonight, and I want to do some catch up of some other things. But anything else, John? I know you've got a ton of articles on performance and in the show notes, some of the 2011 stuff. I didn't necessarily want to hash through some of that tonight on the show, but we'll send folks to homeservershow.com if they want to get some information. You know, we reference you over there as the microserver master and all those things as well. But anything else that that you wanted to quickly cover before we kind of close the books on hard drives?
Well, I just gave you some links in the that you could put in the show notes that I think are good jump off points if you wanted to go over to Home Server Show and see some of the performance numbers that I've run and start and looking at some of the other stuff. I know Kevin Schoonover's posted some stuff over there, and you know, a lot of other people have, and so it's just there's nothing really specific, I think. There was one thing that was in I had in the notes that I'm not sure if you had talked about in the past, but there's a podcast called My Hard Drive and put out by Scott Moulton. He just came out with a new podcast, and the thing was, the new podcast, he hadn't done a podcast for a while, so it's probably the first half of the podcast is marketing for his upcoming training exercises. But if you skip through and listen to the last, say, 30 minutes, he had some interesting stuff, especially about like these external hard drives that you get and how... you know, it used to be when external hard drives came out, you could go and you'd buy them and take the case off and use the hard drive as an internal drive. It just had the SATA port, even though, you know, as an external drive, it was in a case with a USB port. Well, now the manufacturers, partly is to save money, and I think also to stop people from doing that, they don't even put a SATA port on it. The card is there, but they solder a USB port onto the board of the hard drive itself. And so it's interesting, at least from a technical perspective, just listening to him talk about how when he goes to try to recover data from those drives, how he has to address that issue, because he, with a lot of normal USB ports, he doesn't get the call it diagnostic or auditing type information that he could get if he had it attached to a SATA port. So,
yeah,
you know, for fun, that would be a good thing to listen to. But he has some previous podcasts about SSDs and hard drives, I think, that are very, very good, that are worth going back to listen.
You bet. We'll get those listed in the show notes. That show is called My Hard Drive Died. And then you can go to myharddrivedied.com to get that preview.
If I could add one other thing, I noticed I had some RAID links in there. And what I tried to do, though, was just put in links that I have posted over at Home Server Show that are what I call educational links. They're, you go in and it tells you, like one is discussion, it's a BYOB podcast, discussion of RAID, hard drives, and SSDs. It's a very good discussion. They really handle it well. And there's some other, they're more academic type links on storage configuration, assessing the reliability of RAID systems, why if you go over 3 terabyte drives in a RAID 5, why you're asking for trouble, you know, and it goes through the mathematics, why you're likely to have another failure before you get the RAID rebuild and stuff like that. That it's, and also calculators on how to calculate the reliability of different RAID configurations. So that stuff's all there.
Okay, good. We'll put that out in the show notes so you can take a peek at those. Some really good ones, you know, including a link from HP called Help Me Choose the RAID. So you can go out and take a peek at that one. Andrew will thank you for that. John Zadler, anything else you want to throw in there before we go into some updates?
No, I'm good.
All right, perfect. Well, we'll close the books on hard drives. We spent 3 weeks doing it, and appreciate all you guys jumping in and talking about that. It's, you know, one of those things when I started thinking about it, I thought, well, there really isn't that much to talk about, but there actually is quite a bit out there. John, just on some of your links alone, we probably could have talked most of the evening about some of that stuff, so I appreciate doing that. I want to pop over to Christian, because we're coming up towards the end of the summer here, and Christian, I know there's some things going on, and of course there's, I'm not putting you on the spot here, so just talk about whatever you can, but give us a quick update on what's going on with you. I know you'll be transitioning out of your internship because school starts here pretty quick.
Yep.
So, give us a quick update.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much wrapping up. I'm in the kind of documentation data dump phase of everything I've done. Really just giving my final recommendations to the team that I've worked with for the past year and a half or so on where we can go in the big data space. And moving on, school starts here in early September. So there's going to be a lot of stuff going on there. And I'm real close to it, but I'm not going to say anything yet, but I will be able to tell you where my future lies hopefully next week. It's very close and very exciting. And so that will kind of usher in a whole new segment of where I'm going to be in the data world. So I'm kind of excited about that as well.
Very
so,
cool.
A little bit of mystery there, but it will unveil itself.
We'll tease it out for next week. We'll tell people they've got to come back if you want to hear it live next Thursday, August 8th, over at theaverageguy.tv/live.
9th.
9th, sorry. I guess I can't do my
math. Oh, it is 8th. My bad.
No, it is 8th. Yeah, 7
my
plus
bad.
1.
My bad.
It's a 9th for me.
Yeah, you were thinking about Australia time.
Oh,
so
right.
You know
yeah,
what I
you,
need to...
You just want to live. You're like every American. You just want to live in Australia. We know.
Yeah, really, I do. But except the snow is bad this year. We were talking about that in the pre-show. Yeah. Andrew, I hear the little ones behind you. How are things going with the
yeah,
twins?
They're good. They're both starting to get teeth. So seven and a half months old, and we've just gone through the whiny bitchy phase of oh my goodness, I've got teeth arriving. But
yeah,
no, they're good. They're happy. They're happy kids. So that's all we could ask for, really.
You look like maybe you've gotten a little bit more sleep these days.
No, I need a bit more sleep. I think I need to stop sleeping couch.
We're actually getting you back on the podcast, which is always good. So it's good to have you back. And then I give you a couple more months off, and then we'll try and get you back on the show notes.
Yeah, that's it.
How's that sound?
We'll see.
Good enough. You've kind of enjoyed a nice break. If you know, and I always wonder how many actually go out and look at the show notes. We spend a bunch of time. I listened to the podcast almost all the way through one time and kind of wondered, does anybody ever go through and look at those? So, you know,
do
you?
Sure.
Well, it would make sense that you go through it, John.
Oh, thanks.
I'm wondering, well, you're a thorough guy. You like, you know, you go through, you're very methodical. I wonder if anybody else goes through and looks at those show notes. Sometimes as I'm going through the podcast, listening to it to get all the, you know, to mine all the links out, I wonder if anybody, you know, kind of goes through that to do it. So, anyways, if you've got some comments or questions on the show notes, love to know how you use them and how we could do better, or do you even go look at them? Send me an email, podcast@averageguy.tv. I mentioned this last week in the show, but want to say thanks to our listeners. We've had a great month on Amazon, and that Amazon affiliate link out at theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. We're turning those. I've said before that I'm turning those into giveaways, and I'll mention it again just because I want to give. I said it so many times. I want to be totally transparent. Well, we're finding that giveaways just don't really do much for you guys from a show perspective, and so we're going to actually try and turn those dollars into review units that folks can review stuff. I was actually talking with Zadler. We got to figure out a way to get Canadian and the U.S. Amazon stores together. It would make my life a whole lot easier to get that done. But we're going to try and turn those into reviews. If you have something you want to review and you're here in the U.S. and you can, we have a little bit of a review scholarship fund. So just send me a note, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Tell me what you want to review, and maybe we'll be able to get that sent to you, and we'll expect a write up on it, and maybe even a guest appearance on the podcast. So give that a try if you want, and we'll turn those Amazon dollars into that kind of stuff. And then when you're done, you get to keep it, and we don't have any conflict. I always hated that conflict of interest when I had vendors send stuff, or when we got stuff from vendors. I just hated that. I'd rather just buy it, let you keep it, test it out, and for doing that, we'll let you keep it. How's that sound? So let's give that a roll as well. John Stutzman, I'm going to see you for the first time here on September 22nd, which is going to be great. We're going to meet in person for the first time at the Home Service
All
Show
right.
Meetup. It's going to be great. John and I have an ongoing joke in the background. The first time I met him, I didn't remember that I'd met him. And so
I had to Photoshop myself into all those pictures.
It was terrible. It's what happens when you can't even remember your own kids' names. And so we are September 21st, Indianapolis, Indiana. If you're anywhere close to that location, you should get involved in the Home Server Show Average Guy Surface Geeks meetup. And Zadler, it would be fantastic if we could find a way to get you down there. Sarah, my wife, said to me the other day, how are we going to get Zadler down? So we got to figure out a way to get you to the meetup at some point. But we're getting together. There's about almost 60 guys and gals, a couple gals coming. And you can head over to homeservershow.com and get all the details on the meetup that's coming up September 21st, 2003. If you're listening to this podcast after that, sorry, you missed it. It was probably really, really good.
It's going to be the best ever.
It's going to be the biggest ever, for sure.
That's for sure.
I don't know about the best, but we got a Friday night. It starts on Friday night now, so there's some pre-registration on Friday night. If you get in town early, we're going to be setting up boxes out at the hotel that we're at, and that will ease the crunch on Saturday morning that we've always had of trying to get stuff set up. And so Saturday morning, we'll get right into some breakouts, and we get a keynote and some breakouts that we'll be doing. Saturday evening, we'll be getting together for dinner. We'll be hitting the Microsoft store. We'll be hitting Fry's. So you'll want to be a part of that. We're going to spend some money.
Where's the location here?
This is Indianapolis, Indiana. Think you can make it, Christian?
Christian. You can make it.
Road trip.
Yeah.
Hold on. All right.
College road trip.
Wait. Where is it again?
It's September 21st, Indianapolis, Indiana.
All right, I can tell you in like 2 minutes.
Okay, well, I'll keep talking while you're doing that. So Saturday night, we've got dinner, Microsoft, and fries. And then Sunday morning, first ever meetup, Waffle House. That's going to happen. There's a Waffle House down.
Sponsored by Mike Howard from Perfect Draw.
Sponsored by everyone who goes will buy their own breakfast. But
Jim, it's a 500-mile drive.
Oh, that's nothing.
Oh, that's
Jim. Nothing.
How many? What's the hours?
That's a 9-hour. Drive in current traffic.
I'm doing
nine.
It.
Christian, if I'm coming from Australia, you can come from wherever you are.
You are not coming from Australia.
If I was, would you go?
Probably.
Probably.
Christian, I've made that drive three times now. It's 10 hours from Omaha. So I'm not saying you can't do it, but I'm just saying.
Mike, the Amtrak is sounding kind of nice right now.
Well, there you go. Mike Howard is coming up from Atlanta. I will pick you up. Get on a plane, man. I'll pick you up.
Tinker guy is coming down.
Yeah. Paul Brerin just announced he is coming. Rich O'Neill will be there. And
Oh, my God, being paid for it, though. You watch.
This is going to be, I'm not sure, this could be like the Hangover, I think.
Oh, God. The Hangover Part 4 Tech Edition.
The Tech Edition in Indy.
Yeah, and the meetup's only about a block away from Fry's. I mean,
Home Server Palooza.
Yeah.
And not just Home Server, we're adding the Surface Geeks component to it, and so there'll be tablets and those kinds of things to talk about. And if you haven't noticed yet, Microsoft has dropped the price on the Surface RT, $350. So if you want to head out, I got a link on the page. You can go out to theaverageguy.tv and take a peek at that if you want to get to the new RT or the old RT box with Office, what it comes with, and maybe fire sale.
Would you really buy an RT?
Would I? Probably not at this point. Oh.
They've lost more money than they took in on that now.
Yeah,
they had a $900 million write-off last quarter for it.
And their total revenue was like $846 million, and that doesn't count the Pro tablets. That's just the RT, so they lost a ton of money on it. That total revenue of $846, I believe, included both the RT and the Pro edition. And with the $900 million write-off, that means on both products they're in the whole millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think there's no question they lost lots of money. They made too many RTs and not enough Pros. And so
Let's face it, it's not an iPad, right?
It's not a what?
It's not an iPad.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Hey,
it is not. Indeed.
I brought something to show you guys.
Yeah.
It's my first hard drive. It's a Seagate ST225. It's 20 megabytes. Back when hard drives were really hard drives, it's 5.5 inch, 5.25 inch.
Yeah.
And
get that up in the screen there so we can see the full thing. Hold it sideways. Okay. There we go. There you go. Very nice. You know, the mechanics of a hard drive have really not changed that much. Nah. I mean, those components are still in. They're configured a little bit different. But that still looks like a hard drive today.
Yeah,
is that a record player?
Yeah, it almost looks like it. But that's 20 meg, which was a phenomenal storage in its time because the IBM XT had come out with 10, and then this thing, it was a half height drive, 20 meg. It was just incredible. And then I never thought I would run out of storage, but I was starting to run low, so I got the ST251. Which doubled the size. It was 40 meg, and let's see, can you see, maybe if I get back a little bit, and you can see the top of it.
You know, it's not advisable to take the covers off the hard drives, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't work real well, but yeah.
What's the port connection on that?
It's 40 meg.
It's not an integrity issue.
Hold that up just a little bit.
Is that a parallel port?
What is that port? I have a hard time seeing it.
It's a very old.
Yeah.
This is what we use in our Hadoop clusters now.
Yeah,
that's big data right there, Chris.
You got that.
Big data for sure.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
I think I found a quantum foot the other day.
Yeah. This has as much storage on it as the IBM 350 did that I learned programming on actually it was in high school and later in college. But
Thanks.
Cool.
Thanks for the thanks. I had a 10 meg hard drive for a while, and I thought, what do you need this for? I wish I hadn't got rid of it now.
That's that Dalek, isn't it, John?
This is a glass insulator. This is on a completely different spectrum. This is power. It's an old power glass insulator.
This is the part of the show that where we reminisce about the old days.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just do a show, a nostalgia show.
You're calling John old now, eh?
I am. Yeah, actually am. Now, Christian is bored out of his mind.
I'm lost here.
He's checked out.
Christian's looking at it saying, what's transmitted power? Isn't that all just wild?
What's transmitted
power? That looks
like
a cable that got cut.
That is a cross section of one phase of a 345 kV line that you would bury.
Damn, you guys frozen. But we can still hear you.
Well, hey, John, let me wrap this up, and we'll go into the post show. I know Kevin Schoonover just picked up a Gen 8 HP microserver today. We're going to try and bring him in the post show and talk a little bit about that. I'll remind folks that if they come out Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern here in the U.S. time zones, they can join us. That's about noon in Eastern Australia, I think, right? 11? Is it 11 noon? I can never remember what the time change, Andrew. What's 8 p.m. Central translate to your time? Oh, he's locked up, isn't he?
For
Andrew. He looks like he locked up. Maybe Rennie can give us that. But we get a lot of listeners. As I look at the stats, we get a lot of listeners from the Australia, the eastern seaboard of Australia, because it's a great time zone.
His time right now is noon.
Noon. So it's 11 a.m. Eastern Australian time. I think that's the zone they're in. But join us out here live. You can't get the post show unless you come to the live show. So we want you to come out and join us live. Like I said, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern each Thursday night. And I want to thank everybody for coming out. John Zadler, John Stutzman, Christian Johnson, Andrew Morris. Thanks for coming out, guys. I'll remind folks that there's easy ways to listen to the podcast. We've spent a bunch of time on the site over the last couple months and put some new ways to subscribe, either iTunes or Stitcher. And actually, I was mentioned this before, I'm trying to get us on iHeartRadio as well. So if you're an iHeartRadio listener, you can go out and search for Financial Tech. Will be on there in a couple days, so you can go out there and take a peek at that. Home Tech didn't make it the first time. I resubmitted it, so we'll see if we can get on there. But all kinds of ways to listen to the podcast on a regular basis, and hopefully you're getting it in one of those ways. Stitcher is another way to do that, to search Home Tech, and you can get that. We're also on Spreaker, Podomatic, Audioboo, iTunes, Xbox Marketplace, wherever podcasts are found. So no excuse not to get us on a regular basis. You can also view and subscribe to the show out on YouTube. Just go to theaverageguy.tv/YouTube. You can catch the show each week. I mentioned that before, right here at theaverageguy.tv/live. Don't forget, we have groups on Facebook. That's the group you really want to be a part of. So go to Facebook. I'm sorry, just go to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. I do have a Google Plus group, although it's not getting a lot of traction. So maybe because I never mentioned the address, but that is theaverageguy.tv/Google. And again, thanks for using the Amazon link. That's theaverageguy.tv's Amazon. When purchasing from there, it doesn't cost you anymore, and we make a little bit that we're going to turn into hopefully some reviews or some technology scholarship fund that will get going. All right, our time is up. Thanks for coming out tonight. Stay around for the post show. We'll dial in Kevin Schoonover and see if we can get an update on the Gen 8 box. And we'll put Christian to bed because he's looking pretty tired.
You got me beat.
He is pretty tired. We'll bring Andrew back. Good night, guys. Thanks for coming out.